Nation.
Welcome back to the Living Dead Minute, the daily podcast where we resurrect, revitalize, and reanimate George Romero's Night of the Living Dead 1 minute at a time in order. I'm Matt from the Savage Land podcast.
I'm Jason from That Might Be Cool.
And I'm Rachel from the Savage Land podcast.
And today we're talking about minute 14. Minute 14 starts with Barbara at the bottom of some stairs and ends with our new hero, Ben, searching the house.
Oh, Ben. How long does it take good before we Ben. Find out his name is Ben?
Excellent question.
I'm not exactly sure.
As I recall, we'll it find takes out. Quite a while.
Yeah.
But yeah, this and freaking, we'll talk quite a lot about Ben and Dwayne Jones, the actor playing him.
Dwayne
let's get through this minute first before we really dive into old Dwayne.
This minute, I imagine, probably scared the pants off people.
Yeah.
Because, you know, while there may have been some, I think this is probably one of the bigger, more popular films to have an extremely realistic skull with an eyeball still in it. And quite the close-up shot.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was, that close-up, I got to imagine, just gave horrible nightmares to children and people everywhere.
Oh yeah, especially because the original, you know, showings of this film were at afternoon matinees for kids.
I'm sure this is one of the big sightings behind why people were so outraged about this film.
At least to begin with. I mean, there's some other stuff too, but yeah. That's a pretty big one. And here's what I like about it. One of the things I think really makes this movie work is there's a big musical sting when you see the skull.
Yep.
And then it just builds on that reverb, really building tension as Barbara then runs back downstairs and runs outside and there's headlights on her, and it's just kind of, you kind of get this real sense of chaos. And even through as our new hero Ben, that those are his headlights, shows up and gets out of the car, that reverb sting continues all the way through till they're both back inside the house, and as soon as the door closes, all the music stops.
Yeah, it's really like it's pretty disorienting and kind of like disturbing, that last remnant of that sort of reverb.
Yeah, I really like it. I thought that was a very cool, very 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 cool choice and very creative choice.
Yeah, it's very intense.
Yeah, it was, and I like that it did end like right with the sort of the shot changing and the door closing.
Yeah, totally. I thought that worked really well. Like, oh, nope, it's okay. You're safe now.
Yep, we're all safe back inside the house. It's nice and quiet.
Back inside the house with a dead body upstairs. Well, oh well.
Gave people
does it
sort
ever
of a moment
say who
process.
That is?
The upstairs guy?
Yeah. Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
We will find out. So Dwayne Jones is probably the best actor in this film.
Oh, easily.
That's how he got the role. He was the best actor that they auditioned for the role.
And a very significant thing here, and also pretty controversial, he's the lead actor of this film. You know, he's kind of your main protagonist. And at the time, it was not, you know, there had been, you know, sort of black films made. However, it was not the norm for a black man to play the lead in a film of mostly white cast members.
Not at all.
And be the hero.
And be the hero. Yeah. I thought that was, I mean, that's pretty huge for 1968.
It's enormous, especially, again, like with the sort of context of this year being that it was such a, you know, a year that was at the height of the civil rights movement, at the height of sort of racial tensions in the U.S.
Yeah, exactly.
That type of bold choice, I think, is, you know, a big step forward, and especially for people who, you know, like George Romero and the rest of the filmmakers here, you know, they weren't really even making the choice based on race. They weren't, you know, writing the role for a black man. They weren't like trying to, you know, sort of send a message with that at all. They were just casting, you know, the best actor for the role. And in fact, it was initially supposed to be, I think Rudy Ritchie was supposed to play the character of Ben.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, didn't it? He was just supposed to be a simple truck driver.
Yep.
And Dwayne Jones said that he changed the lines to his liking, basically.
Yeah, which I think is just it's so cool that you know they put him in the role, and then he really spiced it up and made it the character of Ben that we know now, which is absolutely the confident, strong, smart hero of the film.
Yeah. Yes. And it speaks to how much this was sort of filmmaking by committee, that they were just like, all right, yeah, whatever. Like, you know, change your lines. That's cool.
Yeah, totally. You can change your lines. Okay, great. Oh, hey, you know what? They work really well. Cool.
Yeah.
Right on. Thanks.
Awesome.
Well, and I think it's also informed by the fact that, you know, Dwayne Jones is, you know, he was a sort of a classically trained theater actor. Definitely had the best, you know, sort of acting chops and resume going into this. And he actually would sort of go on to teach acting at a university. He would have all sort of, like, in terms of just theatrical experience, tons and tons of it. I mean, he, even though he only lived to be 51 years old, he had quite the resume built for him, you know, over the course of his career. He really kind of made an impact in both theater and on screen. Yeah. And we'll touch on that a lot more as we go on. But I did want to note, we've kind of mentioned before how this film has influenced a lot of the modern zombie, you know, culture or whatever. In The Walking Dead, you know, obviously being such a big influence that this movie was on The Walking Dead sort of development, one of the characters that you see in the first... it might have been issue 2 of the comic, but the first episode of The Walking Dead TV series, the son of Morgan Jones in The Walking Dead is actually named Dwayne Jones after old Dwayne himself.
Yep.
That's awesome.
Yep, it's super cool.
Which was also the reason that the character of Morgan Jones was black, because that was, you know, Robert Kirkman wanted to sort of pay homage to his influences right off the bat. And it ended up informing a character, Morgan, you know, who ends up being a pretty big part of the series overall, you know, as he comes back in, I think it was like, what, season 3 or season 4 that he comes back?
Oh, I don't remember.
But, yeah, I mean, it's just interesting, like, you know, the actor Dwayne Jones, like, his, you know, just paying homage to him by creating a character named Dwayne Jones in The Walking Dead ends up creating a whole other character, Morgan Jones, who ends up being a huge part of this, you know, gigantically successful comic book and TV series. So it's almost like this weird sort of 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon type thing.
Oh, sure.
Where it just influences one thing that then influences another and kind of feeds into this ongoing thing. But anyway.
You want to play the 6 degrees of Dwayne Jones for the rest of the show?
Yeah, exactly. No, but what else do you guys have for this minute or for Dwayne Jones himself?
There seems to be a shot they did not mean to leave in. So Dwayne shows up, gets out of his car, looks at Barbara. It goes back to Dwayne, and it's just Dwayne, kind of like, sort of
looking
at a 45-degree angle, just looking. No, just looking into space, not moving. And then it goes back to Barbara, and then back to Dwayne, and he's looking at her.
Huh.
So it's real quick. There's just one little real quick shot where it's just Dwayne just kind of. Just not moving.
It's like an awkward transition.
Yeah, it's a very awkward transition. And then it clips to Billy, the zombie, and then back to Dwayne, and he, you know, gets his act together and grabs Barbara and runs inside the house.
It's kind of funny, too, that he pretty much just comes out of nowhere. Like, when it actually shows him on screen, like, she sees the headlights, and then all of a sudden it's just Dwayne Jones.
Yeah.
Yep, there he is. Yep, I like that. And I liked. Here's how I know that this guy's gonna be an excellent character. He walks in and he already knows what's going on. He said, you know, he says something to the effect that there's a couple here. There's gonna be more coming, and instantly activates his search of the house. And I don't know, just like that. One thing that I admire a lot about the character Ben is how competent he is.
Yeah, throughout. He's very in charge.
Yeah, he goes on for the next, like, 2 or 3 minutes to, like, literally be sort of, you know, systematically, like, going through every sort of motion of, like, okay, this is the next sort of logical thing to do to keep us safe.
Exactly. Yeah,
he's logical and he's calm about it.
He's not brandishing a knife everywhere or stammering around.
No, and he doesn't pick up a phone and freak out about it.
Yeah. Poor Barbara.
Yeah, poor Barbara. I mean, you know, I think, like, so the Night of the Living Dead remake from 1991 had a much more confident Barbara character.
Yes.
And there's absolutely elements that work really well. And then there's just something about, a character, you know, the original Barbara, who just really, it almost is like she's in shock for a good chunk of the film.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that. I kind of like, you know, how would the character been if upon entering a house deal with this other person who is just borderline comatose and in shock from what she's seeing? And how does he sort of navigate that world by, you know, because I think a lot of people in real life, if they came across that, they would probably abandon her and not spend a lot of time trying to, like, help some stranger who's catatonic when your life is so dire, is in such dire threat.
Yeah,
she's dead weight.
Exactly. Kind
of. But at the same time, I feel like if I was in this type of situation, I wouldn't know what to do. I would probably be freaking out as well. And, you know.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. We can all understand that, you know, we can all empathize with Barbara of, like, it's almost like, you know, you can watch it and think of, like, oh, there's two different sides of your person. There's the inner monologue in your brain. One's like, nope, just don't do anything and freak out.
Exactly.
Another one's like, nope, time to get things done.
Yeah, they do. I mean, they do kind of, like, speak to, you know, sort of that fight or flight or that sort of duality that's, I think, in all of us when we're presented with, you know, an adverse situation. And that is either the choice to shut down and kind of, protect ourselves from the situation in that way by just shutting down and not acknowledging it or whatever, or we can, you know, be active and do whatever we can to make sense of it or to figure out a way out of it. And again, I think it's like, it's one of those things where either A, they were, you know, good old Booby John and George Romero were very cognizant of that, or B, they just accidentally wrote something very, pointed and kind of genius.
I think as much credit as I would like to give them for doing the latter, for scripting something with that much sort of meta context, I really feel like they just lucked into it.
Yeah, and I think it totally is one of those things where, like, people oftentimes give a lot of undue credit and admittedly undue credit. You know, I mean, George just talked about it before where, like, there are certain things that have gone on to be kind of, you know, immortalized or sort of deified about this film that were not, you know, they weren't cognizant of at all at the time, but
the choice of casting for Ben.
Exactly. It's, you know, people talk about that as their sort of, like, protest against racial inequality, and it wasn't that, you know. I mean, obviously they were people who were not in favor of unequal, you know, opportunities, but, you know, they weren't, like, trying to make some big decision about it. And I think it's the same with a lot of these things where, like, they just sort of went with what felt best, you know. Like, I'm sure on a subconscious level it registered with them that, yeah, like, this is a good dichotomy to have between a very active intelligent, sort of process oriented person and a person who's in shock and shutting down. But yeah, I don't think it was cognizant, and I think that with a film like this, it's hard for film critics not to go overboard on finding symbolism and you know, hidden meaning.
And there's a whole lot of critics that do that with this movie,
yeah,
as I came to find. But even Judith O'Day said that Barbara just kind of developed with every shot that they did.
Totally. And I think that's how, like,
she was actually initially supposed to be a strong character, but they went with her being, you know, not as strong, and she just developed day by day, basically.
Yeah. And that's, I think that's how some of the best stories are formed, you know, is like allowing it to sort of the room to kind of breathe and go the direction that feels most natural.
Yep.
So, I mean, yeah, it's good. I think it is good. And again, it speaks to the collaboration that they were sort of willing to just be like, yeah, you know, like, we're planning on doing this, but if something better comes across, or if, like, you know, if this actor wants to say their lines this way, or if something seems like it's more natural or plays better with this lighting, or, you know, with this type of direction, then we'll just do that, you know?
Yeah.
And it's a testament to, like, the power of collaboration, I think. Like, when you do collaborate with people and just kind of, like, trust in each other, oftentimes the best thing will come out regardless of, like, who is, you know, least or most experienced. If you're just going with what feels the best, oftentimes you're going to come out with the best product.
Right.
Agreed.
Anyway, that's all I've got except for the little history lesson.
Nope. I've depleted my supply of things to talk about as well. So go for it.
Rachel, do you have anything?
Nope. Go for it.
All right. So April 7th, Formula 2 racer Jim Clark, and this again goes with the violence of and sort of tragedy of 1968. But Jim Clark dies in a Formula 2 race at Hockenheim in an accident, which was you know, very tragic. And obviously, especially at the time, automobile racing was incredibly dangerous, more so than it even is today. And then the next day, April 8th, is the day that the Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs is created in the U.S., which would go on to become the DEA, the Drug Enforcement Agency. And sort of, you know, spawns the sort of beginning of the quote-unquote war on drugs, as is evidenced by the fact that this bureau was created under the... I believe it was under the National Security Agency. Let me double check. Yep, or under the Department of Justice. But this was kind of the start of the war on drugs, which, you know, depending on who you ask, was also kind of the start of the actual major drug problem in the U.S. So it's kind of funny there that it's, you know, again, like a very significant thing in the history of America happening here in 1968.
Yeah.
So, and
I did not know that.
Not only that, but playing on sort of the theme of filmmaking, you know, the sort of drugs thing, you know, after Night of the Living Dead, there would also be, in the vein of zombie movies, the sort of, you know, disease and drug outbreak type movies that are, you know, similar in theme to the zombie films.
Yeah.
So, fun little factoids as we're moving along in 1968 here.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah. But that's all I've got for 1968.
Cool. Well, any other final thoughts on minutes, on the minute?
Not on minute 14, so I think it's time to kick it off into Friday.
Where can they find us on the internet, Jason?
They can find us at TLD Minute on any social network. You can go to tldminute.com or thatmightbecool.com to check out all of our stuff. You can email us at tldminute.com. Tell us any interesting factoids you've got about zombies or personal experiences with this film. Whatever you want to talk about that's Living Dead related. After that, you can join us tomorrow on the Living Dead Minute. Back on.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're coming back on the air after an interruption due to a technical problem.
Nothing wrong with the radio. Must have been a station.